Success is making other people inspired, making other people happy. You know, there's no greater feeling than someone coming up to you on the street and saying that they're inspired by you or really appreciate the work that you do.
Welcome to the Idea Generation Podcast, a show about creative entrepreneurship. My name is Noah Callahan Bever, and each week I'll be speaking with some of the most innovative ideators in culture and trying to figure out how they make their creative decisions. This podcast is brought to you by the good people at Shopify. Feeling that entrepreneurial itch? Turn your passion into a business with Shopify. They've got everything you need to start, run, or grow your business. Check out shopify.com/idea to learn more. New York native Nicholas Heller was always interested in the arts. Growing up in a household with acclaimed art directors in both of his parents, Heller learned early the power of visual storytelling. However, unlike his folks, Heller was drawn to film rather than graphic design. Encouraged by a creative household and a creative school, it didn't take long for Heller to pick up a camera and start shooting DIY shorts around his neighborhood.
My dad was the art director of the New York Times for 35 years. He's a graphic design historian, I would say. He's written like over 200 books about graphic design. And my mom is a more traditional designer. She's done a lot of classic logos and branding. So I grew up just like in a very artistic household. I remember I would help my mom design logos for restaurants when I was a kid. I used to love to go to my dad's office at the New York Times and just kind of like let that vibe sink in. And I didn't really appreciate what they did for a living until I was like maybe a year out of college. And you know, I would grow up going to dinner with all these famous artists like Art Spiegelman and Seymour Quast, Paula Scher. These are like some of my parents' best friends, and I didn't really know or care who they were at the time. And now I'm like, these are design legends. You know, I've always had an eye for good design, but it's never something that I wanted to pursue as a career. I'd always been interested in film, you know, since I was in like eighth grade, I would say. And, you know, they never pressured me to go one way or the other. I got a lot of support from them.
How did they cultivate your creativity?
I was generally into art when I was a kid. Like, I went to the Art Students League, which is a throwback. I don't know if it's still even around, but I would go there. You know, I was really into drawing. You know, I kind of like fell out of interest. Around seventh grade, I started kind of like writing my own movies. And this was around the time that DTV was a thing. You know, before that, I remember you had the TV guidebooks, but DTV introduced a feature where you could see the guide on the TV. So I would like go through and see what movies were playing, and then I would always click info to see the cast. And I would get really into the idea of like memorizing the casts of these movies. And then also in the New York Times, I would go to the section with all the movies, and I would look at the cast, and I would just memorize the cast. And it became like a weird talent that I had that I would kind of use to my advantage at school. Like I would have people name a movie, and I would name the cast. And it was like this secret talent that I had, because I didn't have any other talent. You know, all my friends had weird talents, like whether it be art or sports or whatever. I could name the cast of these random-ass movies. So then that idea turned into me kind of like creating these fake movies in my head, where I would just cast them. You know, the sole purpose of creating these fake movies was just to cast them. And I would like fantasize about these trailers. And then that turned into me actually like writing scenes from these movies. And this was seventh grade. And I would share them with my teachers. You know, I went to a very like progressive school. I would kind of create these kind of fucked up concepts for movies, like about school shootings and like suicide and like crazy shit that no seventh grader would be doing. You know, it was all in the name of art. You know, I would read my teachers these short scripts, and they were very supportive and into it. And you know, we didn't have a film program at my middle school. But as soon as I graduated middle school, went to high school, I took my first film course. The teacher was this gentleman named Chris Reed, who I definitely credit to like getting me started in the world of film and getting me interested in it. And then I just started making my own little short films with very messed up subject matters. Like my whole intention when making these films was to shock people and specifically shock my teachers, because I knew that I could get away with making the most fucked up movies just in the name of art. So I would like make movies about like rape and pedophilia, and like these were all serious movies. Like it wasn't satirical. I would make these movies and it would just like, you know, I would watch my teachers watching it, and like they were so like, what the fuck is going on with this kid? And you know, I'd show them to my parents, and like I could tell that they were like a little concerned, but at the same time they knew that this was how I was gonna, you know, progress to whatever it was that I would end up doing in my future. I was really into the idea of like getting a reaction out of people, and this was the easiest way to do it. It was kind of a cop-out, you know, like obviously showing someone getting shot in the head, you know, especially when you're in high school, is going to get a reaction out of somebody. My teacher was also very supportive. You know, I was like kind of the star pupil, and even though I was making these weird movies, like he knew that it would lead to something bigger and better. You know, I decided I wanted to go to film school, so I went to Emerson College. My teacher really had us like analyze scenes, you know, and prior to that, I never realized that like every decision in a movie was made for a reason, and I was really into that idea. And I didn't really like utilize that in my own filmmaking until later on, but I was just so fascinated, you know, with the idea of filmmaking.
Wanting to get out of New York and experience college in a different state, Heller headed to Emerson in Boston to study film. He started posting weekly videos on Vimeo, which gained attention around the campus, and eventually he landed a music video shoot with one of his favorite indie rap artists, C-Ray's Walls.
You were saying you ended up going to Emerson College in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
What drove that decision?
Well, I wanted to get out of the city, surprisingly. You know, I could have gone to SVA because both my parents worked there. My idea for college was like just not being in the city, not being where I spent the first 18 years of my life. So I went out there and I quickly learned that like college is kind of like what you make of it. And I wasn't, you know, I fell in with the wrong crowd. And by wrong crowd, I mean like not a film crowd. Like all my friends were doing other things. So I wasn't driven to like do extracurricular film projects. So all of my education just came from the classes, and that's kind of not enough, you know? So it wasn't until my junior year, you know, I hadn't made any movies outside of class. Meanwhile, like everyone else, that's what they were doing every weekend, you know? And I was like feeling a little discouraged, like, you know, am I really taking advantage of film school, or am I just like blowing this all away? And it was around the time that the DSLR came out. You know, one of the big issues with, you know, going to film school and creating films was it was a whole process, like going to the equipment center, renting out equipment, getting a crew, like all this stuff. And I just didn't have the patience for that. But when the DSLR came out, I was able to get my hands on one, and I just started kind of being a one-man show because I didn't have any friends in the film program. All my friends, like I said, were doing other things. So I wanted to have a camera so I could have access to it at any time and just make movies on my own. So I started making these short films that I shot, directed, edited, did everything myself. And, you know, I recognized from the jump that I wasn't a skilled technical filmmaker. So I kind of worked that into the aesthetic of all my movies. So like, you know, one film was from the perspective of the camera guy. You know, another film is like from the perspective of a security camera. So it was really about like the action in front of the camera as opposed to, you know, the technical skill and the look of it. And then that kind of like, you know, I kind of like created like a brand out of that. Like, it was also around the time that Vimeo was a thing, so I would upload these videos to Vimeo, and like people around Emerson would watch them and be really into them. And I would try to make like one video a week. And they were all like very similar in style and tone. And then that led to me taking these concepts that I had and making rap videos with them. So, you know, where I was at in Boston, a lot of my friends were in the music world, specifically rap. And, you know, a lot of, like, underground artists would come through Boston to play, and I would link up with them and make these music videos, but very kind of, like, out-of-the-box music videos that weren't being made at the time. Like, they weren't performance-based. They were just, like, weird concepts. You know, a lot of the kind of, like, weirdness and inappropriateness from high school were making their way into my music videos, but it was a little more warranted. So the first artist that I linked with was C-Ray's Walls, and I was a huge fan of his. Like, to me, at the time, he was, like, the biggest artist in the world. And I heard that he was going to be playing a show in Boston, and I had, like, a mutual friend, and I just asked him, I was like, yo, I know this is such a long shot, but do you think C-Ray's Walls would let me make a music video for him? And it was a complete shot in the dark. I was sure the answer would be no. Like, I'm sure he would look at my work and be like, what is this kid gonna do for me? Also, I was so young at the time, but he was down. And I made this music video that was really weird. It was a single shot of a bunch of people dressed as lumberjacks running down an abandoned train track. C-Ray's Walls was one of them. And it's from the perspective of a camera guy. So he's running down the track, these lumberjacks are running, and then people just start getting shot in the head. Like, the lumberjacks start getting shot in the head one by one. So you're wondering, like, what's going on? Like, who are they running from? Whatever. And the last person standing is C-Ray's Walls. He gets shot in the leg and falls down. And then you see him on camera, like, pleading, no, no, no. The people shooting at C-Ray's steal the camera and reveal that it's a bunch of people dressed up as wildlife with guns, and they're just, like, shooting off all these lumberjacks, and then it ends with C-Ray's Walls getting graphically shot in the head. People were obsessed with it, and this was probably 2010. It was very similar to the videos that I was making on my own, but now I had, like, an artist to piggyback off of. Like, I had their success and their following to piggyback off of. So all these, like, rap blogs, like Nah Right and Two Dope Boys, they would post these videos, and now I had, like, this brand new audience of people watching my stuff. And yeah, and then all these artists just started asking me for videos similar. So the next video I did was for this artist named Fresh Daily. And the concept was he's meeting his grandparents, his biological grandparents for the first time. And he's a black dude, and his biological grandparents were my actual grandparents. And the whole music video is just, like, him meeting these two old white people for the first time. I just, like, told him this idea that I had that I wanted to do for, like, a short. And he was like, that's awesome, let's make it for my music video. Started working with Homeboy Sandman, who was, like, the first kind of, like, bigger artist who I was working with, and made a music video with him about a man baby being born, and it was all shot in reverse in one shot. You know, just, like, weird stuff like that. So, you know, I was pulling from the shock value treatment that I did when I was in high school, but kind of, like, you know, it kind of belonged now. Like, it wasn't frowned upon.
Returning to Brooklyn after college, Heller continued to scrape by while making music videos and other short films. But New York quickly grew stale for Heller, so he packed his bags and moved to Hollywood, hoping to find inspiration and success.
I was lucky if I would make, like, $250 for a video. But then I graduated and I moved back to, I was living in Brooklyn at the time, and I continued making music videos. And, you know, now I started working with crews, you know, not big crews by any means. There were still, like, very low budget videos. So I was like, you know, I feel like I've exhausted all my resources in New York. I've shot, like, every corner that you could possibly shoot in. I've shot with every, like, underground artist. Like, what's my next move? So I was like, I gotta move to LA. Like, I wanna be the next Hype Williams. So I moved to LA on a complete whim. I didn't have a driver's license. I didn't have any work booked. I didn't have a place to stay. and I kind of just moved out there, ended up moving in with a Craigslist kid.
What neighborhood?
This was in Hollywood.
Nice.
I moved to Hollywood because I wanted to, you know, I figured, I didn't know anything about LA. I was like, I got to move to Hollywood, right? So I wasn't booking any work while I was out there. I was sharing a room. I failed my driving test 3 times, so I was biking everywhere. I got like 2 jobs while I was out there that was like, you know, they were bigger jobs, but after 6 months of living there and just like, I was feeling so anxious. Like my anxiety was so bad. I was just like, I'm not gonna make it. Like I thought my career was gonna, I thought I was gonna be a music video director. You know, I thought I was gonna be like this 50-year-old guy still making music videos for, you know, rappers. And, you know, I was just like, felt totally defeated. And I didn't know what else I could do.
When you reflect on it now, what do you think was not clicking?
I don't know what was not clicking. I think I didn't have the right connections. You know, I didn't have the money to like create things on my own. Also, there came a point where like I just stopped doing things for free. So I missed out on a lot of jobs that could have like helped push my career forward just because like I insisted on being paid for them.
And what was motivating that?
Being like, I'm not in college anymore. I need to start making money. I hit up ASAP Rocky right after he dropped Purple Swag. And he was interested in doing a video with me, but I brought up money and then he just never responded to me. That could have been a game changer, but at the same time, I'm like super happy with where I'm at now. So like if I was still directing music videos, I don't know if I would be happy.
Was it hard in that moment to force the issue of getting paid and represent yourself in that way?
Yeah, music videos is like, everyone was trying to do everything for super cheap and, you know, like, there weren't my ideas anymore. Like, the bigger the artists were, the more creative control they wanted, and the less money they wanted to spend. So it felt like a job. And I never wanted it to be a job. Like, I always wanted it to be fun.
Was there a specific moment when you were in LA that you just felt like, this has come to a head and I have to call it? This is not working.
I think it was about like 3 months into being in LA that I realized I needed to call it. Like, this isn't working out. I just like wasn't booking any work. And I'm starting to see that, like, you know, being a music video director for a living is not really a thing. I mean, it was the lowest point of my life. I didn't know what I was gonna do. Like, I literally thought, I had no idea. Like, even working at a restaurant, like, I tried doing that and I was awful at it and gave me so much anxiety because I kept fucking up people's orders and, like, you know, so I didn't know what else I was gonna do. So if I had, like, told myself, you know, if my future self had told myself, just keep it going, like, trust me, I would have felt so much better.
You know, your parents obviously are both very accomplished creatives. On the one hand, I would imagine that that cultivates an ambition and the reality that one can be a creative person and successful.
Yeah.
But I would imagine there's something of a double-edged sword of being able to look at these people who are your number one mentors, only knowing them where they're in the flow already.
Yeah.
And obviously you're at the place where you have, it's still the struggle to get going. How did that sort of impact you?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think I really thought about it. You know, in my eyes, my dad was like such a hustler. Like he was the art director at Screw Magazine when he was 17 years old. And then he was hired by the New York Times when he was like 21 or 22. So I felt like I had like very big shoes to fill. And I felt like I wasn't where I wanted to be at, you know, and comparatively to where they were at in their career at my age, I just was way behind them. So, you know, when I moved back to New York, I was super defeated, had no idea what I was gonna do because I had put all my eggs in this one basket. And I was back home in Union Square living with my parents. And I remember I went to Union Square just to like think, because that's kind of where I get my best ideas, is just like on the street. I was sitting in Union Square and I noticed this street character out of the corner of my eye who I'd seen like all throughout high school. Super tall, white dude with dreadlocks who carried around a 10-pound sign that said the 6'7" Jew will freestyle rap for you. And I'd always kind of like considered him like a celebrity, you know, like a street celebrity, because everyone knew who he was. And I was generally pretty shy up until that point, but I used this kind of low turning point in my life as an opportunity to just go and talk to him. And to my surprise, he was really receptive, and we ended up walking around the city together. And, you know, by the time we stopped walking around, I asked him if I could make a documentary on him. And I'd never made a documentary before, but thought that this was like a cool subject. And he said yes. So I made this documentary, and I was really proud of it. It was just a day in the life documentary of this guy. And it made me realize that I could do short day in the life documentaries of New York City characters. And I just ended up making a series out of it. And this was around the time that like web series were a big thing on YouTube. So, you know, I did a day in the life doc on, you know, Larry the Birdman of Washington Square Park and Wendell the homeless fashion designer of Union Square Park. And that kind of started getting a little bit of traction. And that was around the time that I started my Instagram. This was around 2013.
All right, you come home, you shoot the short film, you decide that you're going to make a series out of this. What are you doing to support yourself?
I was able to find somebody who would, like, finance these films. So it was actually, to bring it back to music videos, it was a guy named Evan who had a small record label, and he had hired me to make music videos for his bands back in the day. You know, I just reached out to him one day. I was like, hey, would you be down to finance this series? And he said yes. But it was enough to pay myself and, like, you know, pay for rent and food and all that stuff. But then, like, very shortly after I started making these short docs, I kind of used that as proof of concept to get branded content jobs. I think the first branded content job that I got off of this series was something for TED Talks in collaboration with Lipton Tea. And they flew me out to Turkey to like make this documentary about these tea farmers in Turkey. Just a friend who I went to high school with, who was following along with my series, she got a job at TED and thought I would be right for the job. I was starting to feel very satisfied. I was like, wow, I could make a living directing documentaries. Like, that's sick. Because when I was in school, you know, I loved documentaries, but I never realized that a brand could pay you to make a documentary, you know? So I was super down with this, and also, you know, doing commercials. I was super happy making these commercials, and I felt like I was able to like bring my style to these commercials. And, you know, because the commercials and branded work was kind of few and far between, I had a lot of time to develop my Instagram. And, you know, going back to that series that I made, it was called Know Your City, by the way, N-O Your City. They're still on YouTube. We would put these videos on YouTube and people really liked it, but they weren't getting as many eyeballs as I had hoped, you know, so I was pretty discouraged about that, and I was trying to think to myself, like, how can I reach a wider audience with this? And it was around the time that Instagram introduced video. So I started taking the characters that I profiled, and I would just, you know, do little clips of them and put them on my Instagram. And I would shoot it all on my phone, and people started to become attracted to that, and I would have them reoccur.
You start getting more and more commercial work, but you're concurrently developing this separate following, finding these New York characters. How formed was your idea around what that handle was going to become?
I had no idea what the handle was going to become. I thought it was just a fun way of seeing New York through my eyes. Also, one thing I forgot to mention is coming back to New York after living in LA and like doing a road trip out to LA, so I got to experience all these cities. Coming back to New York and things clicking with this series made me realize how much I love New York and how special it is and that I belong here. Actually, the reason why I kept going with this series was, you know, this was an interesting turning point in New York where a lot of these characters were either getting priced out or dying or, you know, just were fed up with, you know, being a struggling artist in New York, so they left. So I wanted to preserve this. Like, I wanted to preserve, you know, the legacy of Wendell, the homeless fashion designer of Union Square, who I'd literally been seeing since I was like 10 years old in Union Square. And thankfully, Wendell is still around and everywhere, and he's the greatest. But yeah, like I created the series to preserve this period of time, and it's interesting to go back. Like, obviously, I've progressed as a filmmaker. Like, you watch the stuff that I did back then, and it's like not well made, but. It's fascinating to see who's stuck around and who's, you know, who's not here anymore. But I'm so happy to have that in my archives.
What is your attitude towards the sort of constant churn of newcomers?
I mean, there's no stopping it. You know, I think that's why, like, my mission is kind of to, like, hold on to the New York that I love. You know, during the pandemic, I helped a lot of small businesses stay open because in my eyes, like, once we lose these businesses, like, New York is going to be like any other city, because these businesses, they breed character, and, you know, it's not just a business, it's the character and the people that go to these businesses. And but yeah, like, just preservation is super important to me.
So you're shooting these things, you start to develop these relationships with these characters. Mm. How would you describe the relationship that you have with these people?
So, I mean, this was around the time that I started calling myself the unofficial talent scout. You know, I didn't have a big platform, so I didn't have a large following, but I would still post these people, and they would get a great response, and it would make them feel really good. And, you know, the more my following grew, the more I could help boost them, and that was a really good feeling. Like, I love being able to help people who I admire and I think are deserving of it.
At what point did you start to think, maybe I can stop doing this and just focus?
Never. I mean, I'm still doing the commercial work, just now I'm able to combine the two. You know, and I love that. Like, I love being able to hire, you know, my, like, cuisine, for example, for a Popeyes commercial, you know? Like, I'd much rather, as a consumer, see cuisine than just some, like, random person who got the job on Backpage or something, you know? But yeah, so I never stopped. Like, now it's just a nice marriage of the two.
Heller had finally found his footing in film and was creating fulfilling content that showcased his talents and also his love of New York City. As he continued to document the myriad of characters within the city, the brand of New York Nico started to come into focus. Have you ever had a big idea but lacked the tools to implement it? Look no further than Shopify. Shopify is the brand that powers all your favorite clothing, beauty, and sneaker brands and offers the best-in-class commerce tools to allow you to sell online, in person, and on all major social platforms. Shopify fuels millions of entrepreneurs and turns ambition into action. Check out shopify.com/idea to learn more. Now back to the story.
Do you remember a specific set of videos where the brand of New York Nico really came into focus for you?
I mean, there were a few times, like, you talk about Pivot. I feel like the account has matured a lot. You know, at first, you know, it was a count where I was just like, it was basically like voyeuristic, simply voyeuristic. Like, I didn't build relationships with people. But as time went on, I started building relationships and doing like these mini interviews so that you could learn more and more about these characters. You know, I think there were a few videos that went super viral. The first memorable one was, it was around the time that the fidget spinner came out, and I gave a fidget spinner to Matthew Silver, the performance artist, and he just like did his thing with the fidget spinner, and it just went crazy. Like, everyone was resharing it, it got millions and millions of views, and that like boosted my followers from like maybe 50,000 to like 150,000 or something. So I started getting like a lot more eyeballs on my page through that. But the pandemic is because we were in lockdown and I wasn't able to do what I usually do, that's when I really had to pivot and figure out, you know, how I can continue doing what I do without physically being outside interviewing people. So it brought me back to when I was in LA and I was like, what am I gonna do with my life, you know? Because this was, you know, when the pandemic first started, it was like, are we ever gonna go back to normal? Also, I got COVID right away. So I was like sick, thinking I might die, you know, and if I didn't die, like, would I still be able to do what I do? So it was a very bad place that I was in. But I kind of took that and I turned it into a positive. I started this competition called the Best New York Accent Contest, where I had people submit videos of themselves talking about why they have the best New York accent. And it was basically what I was doing before, but just having people kind of self-tape themselves. And the contest just went crazy. Like, everyone was talking about it. And it got all these, like, celebrity participants, like Chaz Palminteri and Alec Baldwin. And it was just the perfect timing, too, because everyone was at home, everyone was watching it. Yeah, it was good entertainment for the times that we were in.
When you were ideating these things, do you do it all by yourself, or do you have a brain trust that you sort of bounce ideas off of? And
no, this I just thought of it. I don't really like let ideas marinate, because like I said before, if I think it's a good idea from the jump, I'll just run with it. So I remember I had the idea to do this. And I immediately hit up Wayne Diamond, who is one of my friends, and you know he's a fan favorite on my page. So I hit him up and I said, "Hey, I want to do this contest. Can you kick it off and just like send me a video of you explaining why you have the best New York accent?" And I posted that, and then the submissions just started trickling in. And at first it was very slow, but then Alec Baldwin posted one, and that's when people were like, "Oh, this is worth submitting." Too, you know.
Who ultimately won?
So Charlie the Wolf ultimately won, who is also a fan favorite from my page. People think it was rigged because he's a part of my camp. But as soon as brands got involved and like wanted to, you know, incorporate my talent into commercials or whatever, branded content, then that's kind of when that financial relationship came up. But a lot of people like ask if I have like my own agency, you know, because like as a talent scout, usually you would have something like that, but like I don't want that, like, because they're my friends, you know, and like I'll hook them up with jobs. Like sometimes they'll hook me up with jobs.
Do they lean into their character, or is this their completely authentic self?
It really depends who it is. I tend to stay away from people who are just like doing it for the attention. Yep. You know? So even if it's like someone like Cousine, who obviously, you know, he's playing a little bit of a character, but he's more or less like that. It's just like more of like a, you know, I guess aggressive version.
I've heard he's
of
a
himself.
Little shy.
He's a little more shy, yeah. But that's still him, you know?
How do you think about the balance of, obviously, you yourself have become a celebrity, a local celebrity, but balancing how much of yourself to include on the handle and how much to keep it focused on the characters?
I kind of hate being the center of attention. I generally don't do interviews like this because, well, A, I'm generally uncomfortable in front of people, and not in front of people, but in front of the camera. And B, I kind of want the focus to be more on my vision of New York and not me. But as time goes on and things progress, I kind of am becoming more comfortable in front of the camera, but I still don't want that to be the focus. Like, I'm not enough of a personality for that ever to be the focus.
As the brand continued to grow, Heller realized that his platform could do more than just showcase the many personalities of New York. He could also shine a spotlight on small businesses around the city, many of which were struggling after the pandemic. By sharing their stories and directing followers to them, Heller's been able to help dozens of local businesses and give back to the community that raised him.
What is your attitude towards collaboration?
I mean, I wouldn't consider myself a one-man band anymore. I'm constantly collaborating. I mean, everyone who I feature on my page, that's a form of collaboration. I'm the only one holding the camera, but no, it's definitely a collaboration. I collaborate. I mean, I'm always collaborating. Everything I do is a collaboration.
What is the biggest challenge to running the handle now for you?
I mean, I'm still having fun with it, you know? Like, I don't consider it going to work, you know? And I don't think I would be doing it if I considered it going to work. Like, all the jobs I get out of it are things that I want to do. So for that reason, I mean, I don't think there are many challenges.
Do you keep a schedule? Do you have...
No goals. I just, like I said, I have fun with it, so...
So it's just, you wake up in the morning and if an opportunity to go shoot with someone presents itself, cool, and if not, then you just make the most out of whatever your day is.
Exactly. Like, I don't stress over not having anything to post.
At what point did your work as a commercial director really become completely blended with your life as New York Nico?
I was asked to help my friends produce this commercial for the Knicks. It was actually a commercial that I had bid on as the director, but I lost it to them. But, you know, we're friends, so it was a little weird. And, you know, they wanted me to just, like, come on and help them produce it, but mainly cast it. So I casted it with, like, all my people. And that's when I realized, like, I have a roster of amazing New Yorkers who, you know, are perfect for stuff like this. And then, you know, I didn't direct that. I just produced it. But then I kind of went on to start directing projects like that.
How do these inbound opportunities come to you?
The opportunities come to me through Instagram mainly. I mean, yeah, I'm signed to a commercial production company, Missing Pieces. I'm signed to a talent agency, UTA. But most of the work I get just comes directly to me. I'm pretty accessible, you know, like if you want to reach me, you can probably reach me.
You know, you said at the beginning of this that you were not very comfortable talking to strangers and talking to people. How has the growth of the handle and this whole brand changed you as a person?
I feel a lot more confident. I'm not as anxious as I used to be. You know, my anxiety was really bad, like debilitating. That's a whole nother story, but like,
so, yeah,
just like experiencing physical symptoms of anxiety, like constant panic attacks, just like being lightheaded all the time. But now I just like, the more confident I am, the less anxious I am, so.
The pandemic has really created an inflection point for you and the handle. It started with the Best Accent in New York, then you had the Love Connection, that was over the summer.
That was over the summer, yeah. But even after the Best Accent, I did Best New York T-shirt and Best New York Photo.
Oh, yes.
Where we raised a ton of money for charity. And that's kind of when I realized that I could also use the platform, you know, to help people financially, help businesses, help organizations. And, you know, over the pandemic, I worked really hard to, like, save a lot of these businesses by promoting them and promoting their fundraisers.
You went to Henry Wang?
Henry Yao, yeah.
Yao, Henry Yao, who has the Army-Navy store.
Yeah. So that was actually the first business that I helped. A friend of mine just told me that he needed some support because he hasn't been getting any foot traffic. And a customer of his had set up a GoFundMe. So I went to go visit him. I'd met him a couple times in the past, but I made a post about him and immediately the comments started flooding in, being like, oh my God, I love Henry. That's so sad that he's struggling. And, you know, we raised like 50 grand for him in a couple of hours. And then that's when I realized, oh shit, like there's a lot of other businesses in New York that need this kind of help.
How do you do your research?
A lot of it is just places that I've been going my whole life. Growing up, you know, in the center of Manhattan, I was familiar with a lot of these places and just assumed that because of the state of the world, they needed help. So I would go talk to them, and sure enough, they needed help. They already had GoFundMes going. And then people would just reach out to me, tell me about their, like, local coffee shop or, you know, this, you know, a clothing store that's been there for 50 years or a restaurant that's been there for 50 years. So, you know, over the course of the pandemic, I'd like to think I helped, like, maybe just under 100 of them.
With his online content booming, Heller decided it was time to revisit his film dreams and set his sights on a short feature using the colorful cast of characters he developed on his platform.
How did the idea for your first short film come?
I've always considered myself a filmmaker, a documentarian, and I've always wanted to make a movie, you know, and I have. Like, I've made short documentaries. But I've wanted to make, like, a real narrative film that, like, went to festivals, and whether that be a short at first and then eventually a feature. But I spoke to my friend Kareem Rama, who's a comedian and a writer, and I had this idea for a short that I really wanted to make. But I just, like, didn't have the time or energy or dedication to just sit down and write a script. So I was like, hey, can I give you this premise? You put something together, and then we kind of, like, go back and forth. And he said yes. So I gave him the premise, which was, you know, a guy needs to find a bathroom in New York City before an important date. And I wanted to incorporate all the characters from my Instagram. So yeah, so we shot it, and now it's premiering at Tribeca on June 11th. And I'm really excited for the opportunities that might come from that.
Is your ambition to develop this into a full-length film at some point?
My ambition is just to make feature films about New York with my characters.
Does it become more challenging to source new characters now that there is sort of the burden of success?
No. It makes it easier.
Really? They just come to you?
Well, now people will reach out to me and be like, yo, you gotta meet this guy. And a lot of times I don't, and I feel like, oh shit, like maybe I'm missing out on that next big talent. But it's easier now.
I know at one point you started making merch and doing commerce as well. How did that start?
It started because it was during the pandemic and I wasn't making any money. And I was like, if I'm not booking jobs, I might as well just try to sell some merch. And I was selling merch, and then the job started coming back, and now I don't feel the need to make merch anymore.
What was the process, though, of getting set up and all that kind of stuff, you know, to run an e-commerce store?
I have people who can help with that kind of thing, but it wasn't something that I was, like, super passionate about. I just, like, needed a revenue stream.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Are we going to see
more? So if you see more merch from me, know that I'm not doing well financially.
Where does New York Nico go from here?
I don't really, like, set goals for myself, because everything that's come in my life has come because of something that didn't really go as planned. So, you know, I want to make a movie, a feature-length movie. I want to make a TV show. I want to do more in that world, but I'm also just content kind of going in the direction that I'm going right now and just see where it leads me.
So you don't have goals. What drives you? Like, what gets you out of bed every morning?
Taking it one day at a time and doing what I've been doing. Like, I find it fun, and I like being able to entertain people and help people.
Nicholas Heller's story is one of a guy searching to find his spark, only to discover, finally, that the catalyst to his creativity has been in front of him the whole time. Heller thought he needed to go to Los Angeles in order to make his name as a director, but the truth of the matter was that the stories that the world needed him to tell were right there in his backyard. He just needed the distance in order to see them. Of course, the sights and sounds of New York have inspired many great works of art since the days of Walt Whitman. But as the city gentrified in the 21st century, there was a feeling that it was losing some of its magic. So when Heller earnestly showcased some of the uniquely zany personalities that only a place like the Big Apple could produce, he managed to tap into a nostalgia for the past, but more importantly, to present a promise for the future. And by centering those dual emotional responses in all of his work, Nicholas Heller has transcended from accomplished video director for hire to become New York Nico. Big thanks to our sponsors at Shopify. If you're looking to start your own online store, check out shopify.com/ideas and become your own boss today.